Very good, thank you. And good morning, everybody. I'm actually in good health, and my doctor always tells me that. My primary care physician is a PBC member, Dr. Madej, and he's from Poland, and he's very, very, very good. And anytime I get anything wrong at all, he has me go through a whole battery of tests. And that's what happened a couple of weeks ago, and I was nothing serious except a lot of heavy sweating early in the morning, and unusual so. And so when I got into his office, he had me all ready to go into the hospital, which I didn't need. And he can't find anything wrong, so I get to come back for a while. And annoy you all, and overwork poor Steve here with panic. I'll tell you, there's one thing I can confess about the times in which we live, and that is that spiritual warfare is something that I'm very, very aware of. Feeling great one day, and awful the next day, and terrible the next day, and have it simply be the pressures of this present world and the powers of darkness. And if you're getting this kind of pressure, you're probably being used of God, and the devil doesn't like that, and he's fighting back. And that's mostly what sometimes zones me out. And I was a sissy when I was a little kid, so I don't have a lot of get up and go, and not so good at taking the whole armor of God. And my chauffeur today got me up out of bed and got me here, my great friend Justin from Santa Cruz, and he's just a tremendous friend. And I have all these resources, so I've no excuse, except I know that secretly that Steve will do a superb job. I wanted to take a little small digression. We're in Daniel, and we're near the end of Daniel. The last three chapters of Daniel are one long discourse, and Daniel is the apocalypse of the Old Testament. And Daniel and Revelation are very parallel books. If we could look this morning at chapter 13 of Revelation, what I've noticed in the news, and what if you're reading the news, it's right out of the Bible these days. What I've noticed in the news from all sorts of sources is everybody's talking about an Antichrist that's going to show up in history. We're going to have an Antichrist. Is this the Antichrist? Of course, it's always popular to identify popular political figures like our presidential candidates. One of these is the Antichrist. Or all of them. You know, Eleanor Roosevelt was the Antichrist, and down through history, it's just everybody. Sadat got it labeled once. And anyhow, yes.
I can't remember who I heard this from, but it was only a few months ago. And they pointed out that the devil intends to resist Christ when he returns.
Yeah.
And the devil doesn't know when he's returning.
Yes, that's right.
So he's always, all throughout history, he's always had, you know, potential antichrists ready for the event. So I think you've got Hitler and you've got Antiochus Epiphanes and whoever, you know, all these antichrists.
Chuck Presser was mentioning that recently, that very thing. That's a good point. If the devil doesn't know the timing, and we don't either, for as far as the rapture of the church, then Satan has to have this counterfeit ready to go on short notice and up to speed. So there's always one. Now, what's not only wrong with the reporting? Let's see if chapter 13 helps us, because we're going to run on to this really very bad guy. All through the Bible, particularly in Daniel, we've all been running into him and prophecies about him, and particularly when we talked about the abomination that makes desolate, spoken of by Daniel in the holy place. There's more than one bad guy. There is actually a really bad guy and a helper, a prophet that goes with him. The word Antichrist is not a good choice of words, probably. Because the Greek word antichrist probably is closer to instead of Christ, the one who comes in place of. Now, that's not all that he does. So he's also opposed to Christ, but there's two of them, and if we're not careful, in fact, I'm arguing with some of my friends over the email about which is which when we come on to the guy. We've already met him before, but let's recall now as we get through the rest of Daniel, let's figure out who's who in this. And one of the key chapters is Revelation 13, then we'll go back in Daniel. I, that's the Apostle John, stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. We've had beasts in the, so far in Daniel to symbolize mostly nations in Daniel, but also this is a man, all right? And the beast comes up out of the sea, and what does the sea generally stand for in the Bible?
Chaos, maybe?
Yeah, chaos, but particularly the restless, tossing sea. And this beast comes up out of the sea. We talk about the sea of nations. Is that okay? So this would be a Gentile, okay? Let's see if that fits now. The beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power. Oh, we got another bad guy in there. We've got Satan, who's empowering him. Gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So this is also the Roman Empire, which is the last of four world empires, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. So this is the... A man, and it's the last of the Gentile world kingdoms are wrapped up in this first beast. There's an awful lot of discussion about what it means that his should have a mortal wound. I don't think that's a literal mortal wound on an individual. I think it's the period of the Roman Empire that went into eclipse for 2,000 years and is about to revive again. I think it's symbolic, but we don't care about that right now. So they worshiped the dragon. All the world marveled and followed the beast. So the power of the beast is the power of grabbing hold of everybody in the world and fascinating them and putting them under its power. He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. Where do you get that 42 months from? We had that in that Daniel 70 weeks? Okay, and the so it's ties back into Daniel. He opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. A world ruler. A world ruler. If the Roman Empire was the great kingdom that ruled over the known world at the time of Christ, then this is a world ruler yet to come. And out of that Roman Empire. So there's some kind of configuration of nations resembling that of the old Roman Empire is coming back again. The old Roman Empire, where was that territory on a map? All the lands around the Mediterranean Sea, all the way Africa, North Africa, Egypt, Palestine, Turkey, Europe, and Rome, and so that, and they spread out their influence from there. So great and powerful. The power of the Roman Empire came from, the old Roman Empire came from, strong military, enormous armies, well-built roads, local government that taxed the people and made slaves out of them and ruled by force when necessary, iron-handed, okay? Where did I stop? Six. He opened his mouth to blaspheme against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. Oh, that's interesting. We've got two symbols in verse 6 for something. What's God's tabernacle, and what does it mean to those who dwell in heaven? Good. We have a roving mic.
Those who dwell in heaven would seem to be the raptured ones.
Yes, there's some people in heaven already, so that's us. We've been raptured. Who do you suppose the other group of human beings is here, the tabernacle? The Jews, yes. So this bad guy is our enemy, and he's the enemy of the Jews and of the free world in general. It was granted to him to make war with the saints, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. A truly world government. Now, there's two arguments on here, that this is every last single corner of the world. That's North and South America and every island and every place. That's one idea here. The other idea is the Roman Empire had a locus of power, but not every last single nation was in the Roman Empire. And for example, you don't see South America in prophecy anywhere. So maybe it's just on the fringes. The Roman Empire is where the power controls are, and what controlling the money and the military and so on. Yep.
Would you be kind enough to tell us where you're reading?
Oh, I was ad-libbing to the Bible. Revelation 13. I'll try to slow down and distinguish between what I've invented in here and what the Bible actually says. Chapter 13, verse 8. Thank you. And all who dwell on earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. We have another third class of human beings now, those who dwell on the earth, and they're identified for us. They are those who do not have their names in the Lamb's Book of Life. How do you get your name in the Lamb's Book of Life, which was written before the foundation of the world? How do you get your name there? Well, if your name was put there before you were born, so you're one of the elect then, so it... Sometime along... Yeah, right here. In the back, or... Yes.
Well, I had a question on verse 7 where it says it was allowed to fight against God's people, and the previous verse we were saying that they were in heaven. So who would be God's people that you would be fighting?
All of God's people.
But if they're gone?
The devil has angels, and they're interested in fighting on earth as well as in heaven. If they could get to us, if the devil could get to us in heaven, he would. Oh, yes.
In response to Sandy's question, might this be a reference to those who become believers during the tribulation period after the rapture?
Yes, that's true. We've got a large group of people who come to the Lord after the church is gone, the so-called tribulation saints. So this is giving us the setting here for the world as it's going to be in a little while from now. Verse 9, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity will go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. Now, what's this note of harshness in here? Suddenly, it doesn't sound like the New Testament. It doesn't sound even like the Old Testament. When conditions on earth call for immediate, swift justice, for example, and call for patience among God's people, not a fun time to live on the planet with lots of violence. Okay, we got this first beast here. We can see that cruel, powerful, controlling the whole earth economically, militarily, persecuting anybody who believes in God. Now let's go to verse 11. Then I saw another beast, coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. How about, I saw another beast coming out of the land, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Now, who could that be?
It seems like it's someone coming from Israel.
Yes, yeah.
And probably a religious leader.
Oh, very good, yeah. Excellent, yeah. The land, Eretz Israel, is Israel here. And this beast, which is a human being, comes up out of Israel, and he is a spokesman for evil, and he speaks like a dragon, so he has that crafty, sneaky, devious, destructive voice of the devil. But he looks like a lamb, and he has two horns. Why lamb? Lamb, we have sacrificial lambs all the way through the Old Testament. We have, in the book of Revelation, we have Jesus appearing as the lamb that was slain before the foundations of the earth. So the Lord Jesus is a symbol of a lamb, but this is not a good guy. Verse 12, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and causes the earth and all who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed, whatever that deadly wound was. So these two beasts, we had two beasts, and this lesser one, the beast out of the land, works for the Roman beast and commands worship of number one guy. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. He deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. Now, with that, those few little clues, we can figure out something more about this second beast and how they work together and what they're up to and what their game plan is. And then there's really the third party in this satanic trinity is Satan himself, empowering them, but these are two human beings now. One of them is essentially a Caesar, a czar, because the Roman Empire had Caesars and czars and Kaisers through its whole history. So we're going to get a Kaiser-like, Caesar-like, strong, powerful, military, economic tyrant over the known world. But his henchman is going to be in Israel. Could be his henchman, it could be Jewish. Yeah, could be. Why? What is this henchman all about? Why is he in this picture? False prophet is his other name, the false prophet of Israel. And you remember what Jesus said to the Pharisees late in his time with us. I have come in my Father's name, and you Jews would not receive me. Another will come in his own name, and him you will receive. Well, that's pretty ominous, yeah.
Okay, I'm under the impression that the second guy is like a real, maybe he's a really nice-looking guy. He's a smooth talker, and he's a manipulator, and he looks so good, and he does all these wonderful things that people can't help but fall in love with him.
Yes, I think so. I think that's exactly right. Very sneaky and very treacherous and charming and charismatic. Now, just imagine, the Jews today are still waiting for their Messiah on their shirts, not Jesus, right now today. The organizations in Israel, that would, in case you're misled, will show you that Jesus couldn't possibly be the true Messiah. The Jews are waiting today for their Messiah. He's due any day now. They don't much care what he's like as long as he saves them out of their present situation, out of their dilemma right now. The rabbis notice that sometimes in the Old Testament, the Messiah appears to be coming as a simple teacher. At other times, he's a strong warrior on a horse. So maybe there's two Messiahs. Or there's something, maybe something happens to change this Messiah. But he's welcome anytime. And now imagine this a little bit. The world has had 2,000 years of teaching about the real Jesus, and we've got Bibles all over the place. And then this guy shows up over there in Israel. Christians have mostly been driven out of the region now, the Arab Christians pretty well. There's a very small number of Christians in Israel and a small number of Hebrew, Jewish Christians. They're not popular. They tend to be persecuted and belittled and out of favor because they believe in Jesus. Now, here's this guy that comes along. We're having an election. Netanyahu has planned for an election in Israel for January. The government in... it hasn't been set for January. The government of Israel consists of, they have a figurehead president, and that the country is really run by a prime minister, and then they have one assembly, the Knesset, that represents all the political parties, of which there are about 100 or so, and they all fight and squabble among each other, and the power shifts a little bit, and then they call an election to have a new government. Now, the government of Israel is secular, sort of. Soldiers get a copy of the Jewish Bible when they join the army, when they go in the compulsory military service. And they are oftentimes pray to God because they realize they had some kind of an important heritage that's in the Bible. But what do you suppose could happen any time in the Middle East over there? How about military tensions against Israel? Never been greater. How about the friends of Israel turning away from Israel for one reason or another? Yes. Even the U.S. now is not a friend. You and I might be, but not everybody in the country is. So does the Bible say anything to Israel about reliance on foreign treaties and foreign powers? What's it say to Israel? What God, Moses says, he says, no, you guys do not need foreign power. You don't need to lean on the broken reed of Egypt. So depend on me, and I will get you through all kinds of military battles and struggles. Did that happen? Yes, it did. They have plenty of battles in the Old Testament where they called on God and had spectacular help from the real one God. Examples of them leaning on a foreign power for one way or another and being defeated or not going so well. So now, this secular power, by the way, is hemmed in on all sides by a very religious nation, but their God is Allah. Allah is an impersonal God. I don't know if you realize that. You can't talk to Allah and have a relationship with him. He's a monad. He's a single entity. He's not a person like the personal God we have. Now, Allah is said to be forgiving and merciful. But he's not going to tell you until the day you die, and then he'll say, oh, I had a bad mood today. I think I won't let you into heaven. So he's depicted as unpredictable as far as your destiny, but that the only way you're ever going to get into heaven, whatever that is, other than being a martyr, is for you to be compassionate and follow Allah and obey Him. The authority for this other religion is a book called the Quran, and another book of the sayings of Muhammad the Prophet called the Hadith, collection of sayings. These two books are the authority. They're very difficult to interpret. They're ambiguous to interpret, and in a way, you can kind of make up your own interpretation, which is why there are two, three strong branches of Islam, and they don't get along with each other very well. But this world religion is determined now to destroy Israel. If you've heard the president of Iran, he's outspoken. We're going to absolutely, completely destroy Israel. And then after that, we're going to go get the United States, because they were friends of Israel, and they have they're Christians, most of them. So we're next after that. And the Iranians have technology and power and money, and they fanatically driven by this desire to see us gone. A little tiny small nation of Israel has nuclear weapons, and they've got a really cracked army and military, and they always in a battle they always win up 20-1 or something like that, because God's with them even though they're not terribly aware of that. Now the other major polarity in the Middle East right now, Israel and the Islamic nations, but Europe, which has traditionally been in the Western circle of nations, is opposed to Islamic world population. When Islam first started, Muhammad first started, the Muslims invaded Spain and Romania and almost took all of Europe until they were stopped. Well, they now want to resume that conquest. And they also are building mosques everywhere. There's a mosque down here in Palo Alto. And they're having Arabs move over here. Most of them are peaceful, but nevertheless, one of their plans for taking over the planet is to fill the world up with Muslims and convert the world to Allah. That's kind of interesting in view of the amount of strong atheism in the U.S. in the last 2 years, where we get all these scholarly guys writing books about how there couldn't possibly be any God, and then all of a sudden this very nasty, ugly, demonic God shows up and starts killing everybody. That's kind of slap in the face against a nation that doesn't take spiritual powers seriously. Now, here's Israel, and the church is gone. We'll take the church out of here, so there's no other place of central reference for anybody to go to except for Israel. Israel now is stuck in this, in between Europe and in between the Arabs, and they're all alone, and the plan is to drive them to oblivion. Then what happens in the leadership of Israel? Along comes an election, and this time the Jews are pretty desperate for somebody that's got spiritual clout, or says he does, not a secular leader. So let's get this guy who says his name is Jesus, but we think that's not his real name, and let's elect him. Now, let's take you described him correctly. What is he going to do? He gets into office on television, CNN and the news all pick him up, and he speaks, does Bible studies from his home, and speaks in the Knesset. And what's he going to say to the world? What kind of message is he going to say to the world? He's got to reassure the Jews and the Jewish military, and he's got to have something to stave off the Muslims as long as he can.
He's going to talk about uniting the world in peace.
Yes. And that's what the Pope prays for every Christmas, so maybe the Pope will get an answer to that particular prayer. The whole world wants to hear that right about now, don't you think? I think we do, and everybody would like to have world peace. And we know our Bible, so we know that there's going to be world peace only when Jesus is in charge and ruling the planet. And also we know now, we can see clearly that Israel is the key to world peace. Until Israel is reconciled to her God, the rest of the world isn't reconciled to God. But Israel is the number one nation that God put there as a representative of him and the Jewish people. So now what's our false Messiah, this false prophet, going to say? He's going to make a peace treaty. We'll see that. That's in Daniel a little bit. But the peace treaty is based on dividing the land for a price. And he's going to make a seven-year peace treaty, which fails at 3.5 years. Does that fit in any place in Daniel? That's what Daniel talks about, this last seven-year period. It's perfect for this false Messiah to come up there, steal the interest. There's no Christians around to protest or debate or argue with him. So he can say about whatever he wants. And he's got some power to do things. What can he do? Well, he has power to do miracles, probably to do things like raise the dead, to impress people that are impressed by miracles, to add that. And how does this... he's just one guy. What does he offer the world? What does he promise the world? Remember that there's two beasts here, and they're in cahoots together, and Satan's backing them. So how does this bad guy has got the whole world fascinated and charmed and amazed? The Muslims, by the way, do accept Jesus as one of their prophets. So if he uses the name Jesus, Muslims will probably think it's the same Jesus that we know. So, and Jesus is a common name in that part of the world, so that he could just as well say he was Jesus. Now, we have a speech to the Arab world tonight, and then tomorrow he's got a speech to the European Parliament. And what is he going to say to the Europeans? The Europeans need Israel. Israel, lots of fruits and vegetables, a lot of manufactured goods. The economy in Israel is going crazy. God's blessing Israel and their supply for a lot of the needs of Europe now. And militarily, Israel is at the crossroads between the East and the West. The Russians are up to no good right now. We got to calm them down. They sort of have a memory of when they were Christians, nation. So what's this guy going to say? We are going to have world peace, and I'm going to bring it about, and my friend over there in the Roman Empire we put the banks all together, and we've got the world banks now under our control. And by the way, we've got a coalition of world military forces that makes NATO look like it was kindergarten, and we have a plan now for world peace, and it's going to be here in the City of Peace that we'll put this headquarters of one world religion. We've invited the Pope to come over, and he's going to bless this new enterprise. And we're going to have a period of peace. The initial treaty will be 7 years, and then when it's instigated, we'll just extend it right on indefinitely. And tokens, signs and wonders, and we know more now. We know a little bit more about both of these beasts. The false prophet shows up in Jerusalem, and he talks to everybody, and he does something more than that. He talks to the world, and he says, oh, I have a friend over here in Rome who's backing all of this, and his program is, he's the real power behind me as your savior. So we're all going to swear our allegiance to him. Yes.
And then he'll probably say, and for your protection, we're going to give this little sign to put on your hand or your forehead to make sure that you can get all the goods and get anything you want, and that any of our other enemies won't be able to.
That's exactly right. We got to have some chips, embedded chips, and a control system so that you can go into any hospital, get medical care in any country. If you're out of food, you can go to the market, and the market will have all the data. It'll read it on your computers. If you happen to be one of the bad guys that sneaked in or faked these chips, you'll be busted right away and killed quickly. You know, we had some fanatics a while ago who claimed that our Jesus wasn't the real Jesus, and we got all of them now, we think. But if one of them shows up, we'll zap him right away. We don't want anybody out there trying to convert people to that old religion. Pretty convincing. No Christians around to counter this. No debates. Nobody. Yeah.
It would seem as though we need to factor in the rise of China, particularly into this, with them expanding their economic forces throughout the world, including Europe.
Yep.
And they're certainly not going to go away during this.
So we got to tailor this new religion to suit everybody. And it won't suit everybody, and it won't work for very long. And that's when it all falls apart. And when it all falls apart, we have the time in the Bible which is called the Great Tribulation, the great and terrible day of the Lord, the time of Jacob's trouble that the prophets all talk about in the Old Testament. That is the most terrible time that the world has ever seen. My friend Gershon Solomon, who's one of those people that wants to build the temple and get up on the Temple Mount, was badly injured, I guess, in the 1967 war, and it kind of woke him up to who God is. I don't think he knows Jesus, but he and I had great talks. He's quite prepared to believe that Israel will go through a horrible Holocaust and almost be destroyed. And that, remember what Jesus said about that last period to the Jews. If those days had not been shortened, no human being would be saved, but for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. So the world peace treaty this guy has engineered falls apart. Jesus comes back to Israel, to the Mount of Olives, and begins to stop this war and roll it all back until he's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. During this time, the Jews will all be converted and all brought back to the land of Israel. And a lot happens in that time. Now, if you see two bad guys here, we know that this first bad guy has to be somebody from the old Roman Empire. Until a few years ago, nobody paid any attention to the fact that the symbol of the Roman Empire in Daniel 2 is a statue with two legs, right? The right-hand leg is Europe, and the left-hand leg extends over into Russia. So there's two halves to the Roman Empire. Which half was the later in history? How did the history of the Roman Empire go from the time of Christ? What happened to it?
It got divided, yeah.
Well, the eastern part of this rose in Constantinople and basically continued to exist until about 1500. Whereas the first Roman Empire pretty much exhausted itself about 500 AD.
Right, good. We've had a lot of flack in the newspapers about a European community, and there's a headquarters for the EU, and there's nations, 27 or 8, that belong to the EU, and it's coming apart right now pretty well. The banks are all common, they're all tied together, but it's not doing very well. And so now there's a speculation that maybe this first beast comes out of the eastern half of the old Roman Empire. Comes out of, how about Syria? Yes, I think so. How about the old Iraq, which was really the old Babylon? Yes, why not? How about? So in the battles that are, in the battles up ahead, yeah.
One possibility is Constantinople, which was the capital of the Eastern Orthodox Church. And if my conversations with people that are Orthodox, whether it's Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox or whatever it is, they still see themselves as part of one Orthodox Church.
Yes.
And with the rise of Turkey politically recently, that brings Constantinople back to mind because that's in their territory.
Right. It would seem that this second beast probably comes, probably does come out of Syria, out of one of those four descendants of Alexander the Great that we talked about. But the one with the military clout, this beast out of the earth, it could come from either side. Where's the money in the world right now?
Well, I don't know about others, but China's getting awfully rich mm-hmm. off of their exports.
Yeah. That's what makes it so much fun to live in the last days now. It's a little scary because the news changes every day.
Yeah, China does seem to have the money right now, but when all things are evaluated, it appears that the United States is still the economic power of
yeah.
the world.
Yeah,
Europe has fallen apart, and we're moving in that direction, but still, we're it.
I think that's true. And as far as accountability to God, if all the nations of the world are going to get judged for their stewardship, and then we could be in for trouble, not just reward. Now, a whole bunch of threads from the Old Testament all coming back together again in the times in which we live. Those nations that we're dealing with weren't there 100 years ago. Syria, Egypt, Turkey, they were just little dusty camel places out in the desert. And now they're great big superpowers with lots of oil. What do you think about Iraq? Anything know about the northern part of Iraq today? Who lives up in the northern part, which used to be called Assyria? The Kurds. What are the Kurds like? Down in the southern part of Iraq, we had a lot of warring back and forth between the two kinds, Sunni and Shiite Muslims in the south part. And they don't like each other very well. And the British put Iraq together. You know, just sort of threw this nation together, ill-suited to live together and not ever very friendly to each other. But up north is Kurdish territory, which includes Turkey, eastern Turkey and Kurdistan and northern Iraq. What are the Kurds like? We have an expert here. How many Kurdish people?
All the way over into Turkey, and not just in northern Iraq, and consequently their forces are more extensive, which is why they battle back and forth about who's in control.
Yeah. The Kurds historically have had a very large Christian church down to the present time. They are generally peace-loving right now. They happen to be in control with a great deal of oil. Turns out we didn't look at this, but Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel all have something to say about Babylon, which is south of there, not far, 60 miles from Baghdad about, and that there was coming a time when Babylon would never be inhabited ever. It would be completely barren land, unfit for anybody.
The Kurds. They're aligned with the United States even right now.
Yes.
The Iraqis are afraid of them, and the Turks are afraid of them.
Yeah.
They were our allies during the Iraqi incursion. We had bases there. They were friendly to us. But, yep. Turkey is frightful of them, and so is Iraq. So something's brewing there.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful. The point being that the news can change by tomorrow morning. I guess the other point be, have the United States be a friend of a foreign country isn't necessarily a good thing anymore. You never know what our present administration's going to do in the Middle East next. That's ought not to happen. But the reason I bring this up is because there's a number of references in the Bible to Assyria. One of these is at the close of Isaiah 19. Isaiah 19 describes three great world powers when the Messiah has come. The great world powers are Israel, actually number three, and the next world power is Egypt, and the third one is Assyria, the Kurds. Three powers on earth that all are allied with Messiah. Not just Israel. Last two verses in Isaiah 19, and there's a highway built from Cairo up to Assyria for peacetime use. Interesting. The thing about Bible prophecy is you can't understand it by looking at one chapter, one verse. I threw this chapter, Revelation, threw it in here today just to drive a little wedge into your thinking a little bit to see, hopefully see how very, very complicated this all is and how prophecy writers can write it all up in a big book and the next year it's obsolete.
I just received the direct revelation.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
God is going to preserve your life and your health because here's the picture that's going on. My grandmother's always worked on these 600-piece jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah.
You're helping us to construct the jigsaw puzzle.
Oh, that's great.
And so I see what you're doing through God's revelation to you as you're putting this, you're leading us to put these puzzle pieces together.
Whose side am I on? Well, I think we'll quit. Does anybody have any questions? This should help in Daniel. We're gonna have to figure out these two bad guys in Daniel.
Sorry, can I backtrack to Revelation 13
just
for a second?
Yes.
It says in, I guess we have time for this. It says in 15, and it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he causes all, the small and the great and the rich and the poor and the free and the slaves, to be given a mark. Is he the false prophet or is that referred back now to the beast that came out of the sea?
The first prophet. We forgot this piece of evidence. There's a temple in Jerusalem now. It's been built. The false prophet is in the courts of the temple, and he's talking, and CNN's picking it up, and the temple's open to visitors. And this false prophet goes into the temple, into the holy place, immediately beginning to alarm the Jews, and he puts up a statue of the first beast in the temple, in the Holy of Holies, just like Antiochus Epiphanes did when he put a statue of Jupiter in the Holy of Holies, which is blasphemous to the Jews and offensive to everybody else. And pretty soon along here, the Muslims are not going to like this very much because it doesn't sound a lot like Allah anymore, does it? And this particular image of the beast talks like the Abraham Lincoln at Disney World, only it'd probably be very sophisticated. And the first beast, our second beast, our prophet in Jerusalem says, "I want all of you to give your allegiance to the Roman military power because he's where the money comes from. This is where the money comes from." Well, that would be like a false Jesus would do that. A false Jesus would say, you owe your worship to the true false father. So the world now, this is going to, what makes the peace treaty fall apart is because this becomes such an absurd, crazy scheme, and everybody now in the world can see that it's fake, and we're both against it. So that's maybe another piece for the puzzle. Does that help? That's deep? Okay. So this is late. When this happens, this desecration of the temple. Now, this desecration is what Jesus talked about as the abomination that makes desolate. That is, the ultimate desecration of the temple is for a human being to go into the temple and declare that he's God, when only Jesus is God, when the Holy of Holies is a holy, sacred place. Antiochus Epiphanes defiled the temple by desecrating the sacrifices, but by putting a statue of Zeus, Jupiter, in the in that holy of places. And that's what caused this revolt of the Maccabees that finally restored true worship. So there's going to be a cleanup after this, a great revolt when the real Jesus comes down and puts everything back in order. Okay? Another question.
This might fast forward things a little bit, but in chapter 17, you have the prostitute riding the beast, and a lot of people feel that she is the Vatican.
Yeah.
All right. So would you agree with that?
And
no. If not, how does that relate?
Yeah. Revelation 17 is the mystery Babylon the Great. It's a prostitute. But the original prostitute is Babylon, which is this false religion, false world government that came out of Babylon that Nimrod set up. So it's coming back. All of the evil that originally came up out of Babylon and went out to the world is folding back in a time of judgment against the whole mystery of Babylon. So the false church is part of that. But the false economic system is too.
All right, now it also says that she is that great city that reigns over the kings of the earth. So
most people would say that's Rome. Some people would say that it's Constantinople or that it's Babylon. The symbol of a prostitute runs through the whole Bible as symbolized by Babylon, confusion and chaos in the name of religion. Okay, you can all do these puzzles, and then we can compare them and give awards.
I think the fascinating thing in looking in Daniel is how... Yeah, Bob.
Thank you, Lambert.
Yes, thanks, Lambert. It's great to have him back. The fascinating thing, especially when we get into chapter 11, is how specific the prophecies are, and they apply to things that were, I guess, nearer term, but then they are constantly shifting to the end times. And so that's kind of an ongoing theme in these visions, is that, as he said, just as Antiochus Epiphanes had this abomination that makes desolate, that's repeated in its full, prophetic realization later. So that just really makes it interesting and important to study. Father, thanks again that Lambert's back with us, and thank you for the very strong reminder to be putting our faith and trust in you and not in the things of this world. And we pray we would live hopeful lives, but also wise lives, with our eyes open to the things going on around us, with a desire to give our full and proper attention to your prophecy, Lord. It's there for a reason. We pray that we would take it seriously, wrestle with it, ask for your Spirit to illumine it in our lives, and that, again, we would understand that you are sovereign, that you are Lord, and that we'd be willing to share that with those who could easily be led astray and are easily being led astray. We know that but by your grace and by your Spirit, there we go as well. So thank you for your grace and mercy in our lives, and make us faithful ambassadors for you. In Jesus' name, amen.